It's 5:30, 5:34. Good gracious me, we're running a little bit late. It's time for the Gadget Guide, and Rob and Lawrence are here, as always, for that. And this week we're talking GPS, guys.
Yes, evening, Julian.
Hello, Julian.
Nice to be back. Number 35. Blimey, it's well over a year now, isn't it?
A year of these wonderful gadget sessions, yes.
Yeah, so we'll be talking in a moment about GPS and what it is and how it works and how it gets used. But just a quick sort of tech news roundup, as we normally do at the start of this. And I guess the big news for today, really, is Windows 8.1.
Yeah, out yesterday. Running it now on my machine.
Brave man. Did it all work?
I have reinstalled it twice.
So it didn't work that well then.
I'm having problems with one of the features, which is Secure Boot.
Oh, right.
It doesn't want to like me anymore.
But you have your start menu back, or start button. Not the start menu, the start button.
Yeah, but
back.
If you click that, all it does is take you to the Metro interface anyway.
Oh, but everyone said we want a start button, so they've given you a start button.
But I find the problem with the upgrades is not so much the new operating system, it's all those other applications that you've used with the old one, and some of which no longer work in the way you expect them to.
Yes, and also the...
I haven't had that problem.
It's the Who Moved My Cheese. You know, something that you knew by muscle memory effectively beforehand has now moved, and now you can't find it.
Mm. Interestingly enough, of course, you'll know that Mavericks, the new version for the Apple, is out in a couple of weeks. I don't think they've got a precise date announced at the moment. And I got an email this morning from a third-party provider, which I use, and it basically says, don't upgrade for a week. We've tested it, but they might have changed something in between the test version they gave us.
Oh, no doubt. Yes.
Yeah.
And Microsoft actually came under some flak for doing something very similar with Windows 8.1. Normally, they would release these things relatively early to software developers and people working with the technology so they can get stuff ready, then get it tested. This time, it was a very, very late release, or a very short time between releasing to manufacturing and releasing to public, and that caused some amount of consternation, but it's all out there.
So, of course, the one main problem is how you get it, which is via the Windows 8 store. So if you go into the store tile on your Metro interface...
If you've got Windows 8 already.
If you've got Windows 8 already, yes. It will then offer you the upgrade. The problem is you have to do it on every single machine individually. So if you've got 5 machines at home, you'll be downloading 3.6 gigabytes 5 times.
Oh, so maybe do that overnight or at the weekend, something like that.
Yes, although if you do say start downloading, it will do everything up to the please accept the new license conditions...
And then wait.
So basically it will get to that point and wait. After that, you've probably got about 15, 20 minutes of waiting while it says, please wait, I'm getting things ready for you.
Now, it was also in the news because their progress bar is, as progress bars always are, absolutely fantastic. It goes from 0 to 100%. It says, we're getting stuff ready. And goes 0 to 100%. And then it restarts, and then it says getting some more stuff ready, and starts again at 0%.
Yep, it does keep prompting you with all sorts of exotic things like that. Anyway, that's Windows. The other product Microsoft released was actually an Android application.
Oh, so that feels a little bit odd on Google's operating system.
So it almost sounds like them admitting defeat on Windows Phone by releasing an Android app that gives you Microsoft Remote Desktop.
So this is really for business users more than home users. It's so that you can control your desktop PC from your phone.
From your phone or your Android tablet. Windows 8 Professional will let you use RDP as well on
right.
your desktop. So if you've bought a new machine with Windows 8 Professional and you have an Android device, go and look for the Microsoft RDP client in the Play Store.
Now, talking of Android tablets, there's a few new ones on the market at the moment. The one that I've been looking at is the Tesco Huddle.
Yes, very reasonably priced beastie from everyone's favourite large behemoth of supermarket.
Yes, £120.
Yes.
And heavily promoted, I notice, as you walk through the supermarket
door.
So. And tied in with their online video service, Blinkbox, as well.
Yes.
Yeah, so I think you get free Blinkbox subscription if you buy a Huddle, I think.
Not sure exactly how much subscription you get free.
Okay.
But I haven't been able to find any literature on that. Yes, you get all sorts of benefits and extras if you're a club card customer and whatnot. Nice tablet in that it's got an SD card slot, so you can add more storage to it. Build quality, reasonable. I mean, it's your average cheap Chinese tablet.
It's not a £400 tablet.
No.
Yeah, it's not as nice as the iPad 3 or something like that, but it's £120, and compared to a lot of the tablets in that price bracket, really very, very good, it seems.
Yes. Google released an updated version of their Nexus 7 tablet, the 2013 edition.
And of course, this has meant that the last year's, the 2012s, have now been sort of flogged off quite cheaply as well.
Yep. The other thing is the Nexus 5 phone from Google, due imminently. They've accidentally released it into their Play Store once, admitted that they accidentally released it, and then officially announced it.
Took it away again, presumably.
Now, is that actually going to have a 5-inch screen? Because the Nexus 4 was the 4-inch phone. Is the Nexus 5 going to be a 5-inch phone? And if so, does that mean that next year is going to be the Nexus 6?
And the Nexus 8 is going to be a tablet. So.
Yeah. Just to complete all possible screen sizes.
So screen size is not quite 5 inches.
Oh, okay. So they're not quite there, but certainly continuing the trend towards ever larger screens on the top-end smartphones.
Yes, although it will ship at the same time as Android KitKat 4.4, so the next version of Android.
Very nice indeed. And, of course, with these ever larger screens, you need more power to drive them. And there's now a particularly large battery pack, isn't there, that is available on Amazon.
It's fairly reasonable size as far as physical dimensions, but 13,000 milliamp hour battery. So I've made a shortcut so that people can find it easily at bit.ly/battery13. Will find you it on Amazon for £30.
That's not bad.
And, I mean, it's small enough to fit in a coat pocket, and it'll be able to charge your average smartphone 6 times over.
Ooh, pretty good. So that'll keep you going for most part of a week, probably, if you're on holiday.
Yeah, I mean, if you're going away for a weekend and you don't want to lug lots of power bricks along, battery pack like that useful. If you're taking the train and you want to play with your phone on the train, this way you've got some supplementary power on you. So that was at bit.ly/battery13. For a £30 battery brick from Amazon.
Definitely sounds like a good one for the Christmas list. Anyway, shall we talk about GPS?
Yes.
Now, everyone's probably heard this term, but first of all...
Or sat-nav.
Yep, it's kind of used interchangeably nowadays. But just a quick bit of history. And the GPS, the Global Positioning System, was something originally launched for use by the US military. So it was primarily a military system, and for a long time, only the military had full access to it. So it's a set of satellites, about sort of 30 or so in orbit at any one time, but that varies a little bit. They sort of have some spares ready to go, and they die every now and again, but about 30 or so in orbit.
Well, so, I mean, since they first trialled it, I mean, they trialled it in 1972. It's that long ago.
God, dear.
40 years.
72, that's astounding.
Yeah. So their first trials were with land-based pseudo-satellites, just to test the technology. 1978, they launched the first GPS satellite as we know it today. And since then, there have been more than 60 launched. So obviously, some have died in the time. There's 31 active at the moment in the US's version of GPS, which is effectively called GPS 2/3 at the moment.
Halfway between the two, obviously.
Yeah, I mean, they're sort of starting into the GPS 3 phases. They're launching new ones. They've got, over the next 10 years, there's 36 new satellites planned.
And this is a big operation. This is not just sort of throw a satellite up and leave it there and it stays working. And you have to keep maintaining these, replacing them and so on. But the interesting thing is that when it was first launched, just like I say, as a military thing, for civilian use, it was deliberately crippled. And this was more so that people couldn't basically, so other powers, other militaries around the world couldn't use it for launching their own missiles and using that to guide planes.
So when did it, if you like, the tipping point come to move it between something used for military use and consumer use? Is that in part what's happened with consumer electronics in a way, and the fact it's easier?
No, it wasn't really that. I mean, because it was recognised as military, it sparked a lot of countries to do their own. So the Russians have got their own called GLONASS.
Only really used over Russia.
Primarily over Russia. I mean, it's focusing on that. They need 14 satellites just to cover the Russian footprint of land on the Earth. China have got their own, and they're actually just developing their second one, which will go into commission 2020. They've already got 16 satellites in orbit, going to be 35 satellites soon. The EU is working on one. You've probably heard of Galileo.
Yes, I remember the European one. So that's still a possibility.
It's still going ahead. They had to do a bit of a rush on fairly recently because part of the deal for getting the frequencies that they use, because it uses radio signals, very, very, very weak ones, part of the deal was that they had to have their first satellite transmitting by a certain date.
Hmm. And it's a use it or use it policy when it comes to frequencies, isn't it?
It's exactly that. So I think a year or two back, they had sort of quickly push one up and get that going. And now they're sort of gently trickling
them out.
You
have these sort of things
that's
referred to as paper satellites. I think one of the most famous ones was TongaSat, which Tonga had no intention of launching a satellite, but they they purchased the registrations or made the registrations so they could then sell them on to somebody else, you see.
Oh, clever, clever. But no, the EU one, Galileo, should be up sort of between 2014, 2019, depending on, you know, so obviously gradual rollout.
There's already test stuff running, so they have got stuff transmitting. But to answer your question about when it became prevalent, it was actually a commercial airliner being shot down for straying into the wrong airspace that sparked the whole thing. And the US government at the time went, well, that's a problem, so maybe we should allow the civil aviation, so the non-military, access to this technology so that we can actually make sure aeroplanes in the right place at the right time.
Okay, that makes sense.
That was about the year 2000.
Bonnie Tyler. Lost in France after all these years. Still looking for some points from Eurovision, presumably. It's 13 minutes away from 6 o'clock. The Gadget Guide and Robin Lawrence are here.
Excellent. Welcome back. So we're talking about GPS this evening, global positioning system and satellites. We've just given you a quick sort of bit of history of what the system is and how it works. From a technical point of view, though, it's all about time. GPS is basically a collection of really accurate clocks. And it's not just the sort of clock that you'd have in your watch or computer or something like that. It's something that you've got all of these satellites, as we mentioned, that are all locked exactly together using atomic clocks. And of course, wherever you are on the Earth, you're a slightly different distance away from each satellite. And because the speed of light is, it's very, very quick, but it's not instant.
It's also a constant.
It is constant, give or take the clouds, which do make a difference. You can measure how long it takes the signal to get from each satellite to you, and then you can work out how far you are away from each one.
So, yes, your receiver's got a clock in it as well. You get the time information from various satellites. They're all sending out their time as their main thing, which satellite and what the time is. So your receiver then does a whole lot of maths, works out where those satellites are in the distance, does the does triangulation, and works out where you are on the ground.
I've noticed when I've had, if you like, the wrong time set on the GPS, it still calculates,
yes,
the amount of minutes it will take me, so it will tell me I will arrive at the destination,
yes,
at the wrong time, but in the precise amount of minutes.
Yes. And it does know what the current time is, as long as it gets the right time zone. But this can develop, really quite good accuracy. And the current GPS system is somewhere, again, it depends a little bit on various factors, but between sort of 2 and 10 metres.
Yeah, I mean, some of that depends on the amount of cloud cover, as you said, what conditions you are actually in. So trees block signal, so do urban canyons. So between skyscrapers in the city, you'll find your GPS doesn't work as well if you're driving through the City of London, for example, or New York, or, any of the big cities.
Just the kind of place where you might need it, of course.
Yes, and it says, you're 3 blocks from where you think you are, and that's normally a problem. So some of those things are going to be improved through the European system, Galileo.
And it has to be said, modern GPSs, modern sat-navs are so much better than the ones,
yes,
even 5 years old.
Yes.
Yeah, the ones that you used to get, you had to hold them up in the air and wait 10 minutes for them to get a lot.
Well, they put better receivers in them. They're able to receive more satellites. They're also able to, like I said, receive things like the new Galileo satellites. So any of the newer stuff in the last couple of years is already aimed to the consumer, but able to deal with European satellites, the Chinese ones when those come on stream, because all of the countries that are putting up satellites for GPS have at least collaborated on what they're going to do.
A lot of mobile phones have some sort of GPS facility in them, or the ability to navigate. How well do they compare, say, to a standalone unit?
So the first showing of GPS in a mobile phone was 2004, and that was Qualcomm showed what they called assisted GPS. So that used your cellular base stations to work out a rough, rudimentary position of where you are, normally within 30 to 40 metres. So not great. Now that they put GPS chips in the phones themselves, you can get down to 1 or 2 metres. So pretty accurate.
And that's important, because also having that rough location makes it a lot quicker to get a signal. So actually sometimes your phone will actually find a satellite fix faster than something which doesn't have normally the Wi-Fi chip in it, as well as the mobile data. Mm. Of course, it's not just, everyone's familiar with GPSs in phones and in their cars, but also there's a whole load of dedicated devices. So if you're into particular outdoor hobbies in particular.
So, this is where GPS started really in the consumer electronics space, was a handheld device that you could go out in the outdoors, you wouldn't have to carry a map necessarily, and you could use it to get from A to B hiking because your GPS would be telling you where you are. And those sort of devices have been around since the late 90s for consumers, and they've come down in price a lot. You can now get ones that are dedicated for hiking. You can load proper maps onto them, so not just a glorified digital compass. Fishing, you can get ones with built-in fish finders, so it'll actually show you the shoreline of where you are, as well as be able to interface with a sonar and show you where the fish are in relation to the shore.
And of course, on boats.
Presumably, so when there's lots of fish and not individual ones you might be after.
I don't think they've actually got trackers on the fish.
That old perch, which is supposedly swimming through the river.
And then, of course, wearable devices. There's a lot of wearable sports watches now with GPS built into them, and literally launched this week, Adidas launched a product called the My Coach running watch, about £350. So not a cheap device, but this one's got a built-in GPS so that you can actually download your route and look at it on the map. Built-in heart rate sensor as well now, in the wrist strap itself. So no heart wrap strap around your chest and so on anymore.
And this integrates beautifully into a lot of the fitness programs nowadays. Yeah, you get back home, or even if as you're on the run, and you can instantly see your route, you can compare it, you can save it, you can share it with your friends, you can suggest new routes to people, you can find out other routes that people have done. And
you can compare your time in real time to someone else.
Exactly.
And you can run virtually against someone by downloading their run into your device.
Yeah, and sort of see, how fast did I go along this bit versus that bit. It's an absolute, really great tool for anyone that's doing any kind of sports, really. Absolutely fantastic. And of course, there are just dedicated trackers, aren't there, as well as...
Yes, there's a company called Spot who produce a satellite tracker. Now, this one's got one of the subscription-based services in it, so you do have to pay a bit of a subscription, because this one can send messages back via the network as well.
Not via the GPS satellites themselves.
It's via a satellite network, so that you can report your position to friends and family if you're in the real outdoors where there's no mobile phone coverage.
And I know that's quite popular with skiers and people who are doing a lot of mountain climbing and stuff.
Serious hikers, I guess, as well, if you're going off into some more mountaineering, sort of halfway between the two.
Yes. We'll say the coverage is not great in Africa, though, for that system.
That's true, especially in the bottom half of the continent is a little bit dodgy. But interestingly, it can actually be cheaper to send messages, because these short text messages can be cheaper using the satellite trackers if you're abroad outside of the EU than using mobile phone text messages. Yep. So do
compare. It's less than £1 to send a message with the Spot system, so yeah.
Very nice. Well, I think that's about all we've got time for this fortnight, Julian.
Yeah, thank you very much, both of you, to Rob and Lawrence.
Thanks,
as
Julian.
Well. I should quickly mention Phil Rowe's programme on Sunday morning, Sunday Breakfast, because he's going to be looking at the Pi, of course, a company well known in Cambridge for many a year. And Becky Proctor is working on the Pi story as a community project based at the Cambridge Museum of Technology. So she'll be in the studio alongside Robert Crabtree, his former personnel manager at Pi Telecom and also one of the trustees of the Pi Foundation. So that's Sunday morning.
Hopefully that'll be a podcast as well.
I dare say it will, if you're very nice to Phil.
It seems to be a theme in Cambridge, doesn't it? We've got Pi Telecoms and the Raspberry Pi as well in the modern day.
I think so too. There used to be Pavitt's Pies as well. That was something completely different.